So as I said in the first half, we are going to explore the second chapter of Living Wisely, which is called The Essence of the Matter. And I said it's a very, very important chapter. We're actually going to discuss a very short teaching. Be aware of short teachings. They're very challenging. They're not as simple as they look. So Charlotte was kind enough to share with us what her response was to that statement I made, that you're going to hear about the essence of the matter. And one thing Sangharakshita also encourages us to do is to look at our attitude when we are about to study the Dharma. So you guys could be sitting in a much more comfortable place, I guess. You could be at home doing something else. But you chose to come here, sit here on the floor or on those chairs and study the Dharma. So why are you here? Why are you interested in the essence of the matter? And what's your emotional response to that? The essence of the matter. Why are you here wanting to explore that? So I would like you to just get together in small groups of 4 or 5 and just share quickly why you're here and how you respond to that that claim that you're going to explore the essence of the matter. Just very quick, kind of a minute each or less.
I think also, well, for me, I just
Opportunity to talk more. So I'm sorry if you didn't manage to share everything you wanted, but there will be lots of other times during the class when you'll be able to share things with other people. So, the teaching that is the essence of the matter. Are you ready? It says, I am not, I will not be, I have not, I will not have. I'll repeat. I am not, I will not be, I have not, I will not have. Now, in the scriptures, it's full of these stories of the Buddha coming, meeting someone and saying something like that, just two sentences, and the person, wow, gets enlightened on the spot. I feel so disappointed. I hear things like that, and my response is, what? I'm not. Of course I am. Look. You can see me. So, how is it for you to hear that? That there's this big teaching, great, will change your life, and says, you are not, you won't be, you have not, you won't have. Well, first of all, let me just explain, that doesn't mean you don't exist. I'm pretty sure you all exist. I can see all of you, I can hear all of you. So you're breathing, as we notice when we're doing the mindfulness of breathing, you all breathe. So what is this about? It doesn't mean that you don't exist. What means is that your existence is not an existence that, it's not that you're real in an ultimate sense, in the sense that you would be here no matter what. So I used to think, well, if my mom and my dad hadn't met, then I probably, instead of being born in Brazil, I would have been born in, don't know, the Bahamas or something. No, I would not. You know, I wouldn't be born no matter what. My existence is dependent on conditions. So it's not that whatever happens in the world, the Lamani will exist. That is not. That is what this teaching, in a way, is saying. I just say in a way because obviously I can't just explain a deep teaching like that with just a few words. But that kind of, I'm just trying to nudge your mind to what the teaching is saying. And what Sangharakshita says, and I felt very reassured by that, is that he says in the book, the ordinary person will take this, you mean, this teaching, as meaning you simply don't exist. And that must surely be seen as a very terrible thing. This is meant to be the path of liberation. But when they first come across this teaching, very few people are going to experience it as being liberating. Can you imagine it as being liberating? Like, you are not. Oh, phew, I thought I was. Oh, I'm so liberated now. I haven't got that. But actually, if you're really, really wise, that's what this teaching could get you to think. Ah, oh, good. I thought I was. So, be honest. Maybe just talk to the person sitting beside you. How do you experience this teaching? Be completely honest. Just share that with whoever is sitting close to you. Explore a bit. Oh, by the way, I will get you guys to talk a lot with each other, but if you have any questions or things you'd like to share with the whole group, just let me know. So what, I'll just repeat again, not repeat again, I'm going to read something else Sangharakshita says in the same chapter, again, in order to reassure you that this, you don't exist. It's not supposed to feel so terrible. He says, it's not that you are completely non-existent, or unreal. It's rather that you do not exist in the way you think you do. So you do exist, but you're not this permanent, completely self-reliable, fixed thing. So you do exist, but it's slightly different than what you think you are. And when considering these teachings, we have to be careful that we do not approach the Dharma with a negative self-view, because that wouldn't help you. So we need to be really careful not to get into this idea, oh God, nothing exists, I don't exist, so why bother? And another thing Sangharakshita says as well is, if our gut feeling is that we have or are a self, it can feel as if the Dharma is going to take something away from us that is central to who you are, to who we are. When in fact, the Dharma is there to help us see ourselves, whatever we might be, more clearly. So the Dharma is there to make us see ourselves more clearly. So it's not saying, oh, you've got this self, you've been cultivating this self all your life, it's such a precious thing, isn't it? My precious, I know myself. And then the Dharma comes here and says, sorry, there's no self, move on. And then you could feel a bit challenged by that. But it's not saying that there isn't this self. It's saying that actually this self is not the whole of me. I'm much bigger, and so are you. You're much bigger than what you think. So if you identify yourself only with the sense of self, even the language, isn't it? Now I notice, I say, if you identify yourself, again, there is this sense of self. So if you think of yourself as being just yourself, your ego, what you know about yourself, what you used to think about yourself, then you'll be very limited. And you're much, much bigger than that. So the Dharma is saying you're bigger than what you think you are. Even if it says in that some kind of a bit blunt way, isn't it? You are not. So what we are saying here is that there is another dimension of your experience that is more real, and in contrast with this reality that is more real, what you take to be real is just an illusion. So I've got this illusion that I am just the way I am, what I know about myself. But reality is something else. This is just one aspect of what is being real. And I can notice now got to that point. When I said you can use words and concepts and you get to a point your rational mind can't just cope, well, I reached this right now. I just don't know what I'm talking about anymore. The words just get a bit weird. So, we take to be real some aspects of ourselves and not others. So, again, just share a bit with someone close, sitting close to you. What is it that you take to be real in your sense of self? So, for example, I can say, well, I'm definitely Brazilian. I'm definitely a woman. I definitely live with Subhadra Mahati in the same community. So, and I am an extrovert and blah, blah. So I can say things I know define myself. Apart from being born in Brazil, which I can't change, anything, or even being a woman can change, can't it? So anything can change in this. So what is it that I take to be completely real and unfixed? So just share a bit what you think about yourself that is completely real and you're so used to it, it's so much part of you. Yeah. Is also saying is that what we know about our sense of self or I, you know, big I, he says I is only one small aspect of the self and is not as important as it thinks it is. So that's a bit humiliating, isn't it? It's me. No, actually, it's just a little bit of you. Now, I'm a psychotherapist, so reading the next paragraph, it kind of really had an impact on me. It says that what this is doing is, this teaching spells the death of the ego, ego as in sense of self. And when we realize that the ego is pretty well everything with which we identify, it feels like our death. And it is, isn't it? If that's all I know about me, my ego, and then I'm saying, well, this ego is not as important as it thinks it is, that could be experienced as you dying, instead of, actually, you're much bigger. And that's what Sangharakshita goes on saying. She says, we are more than that. We're bigger and more multifaceted. I actually didn't read the whole teaching. The whole teaching says, no, don't laugh, it just gets worse. It's not. No, actually it doesn't. It's beautiful. It says, the whole teaching says, I'm not, I will not be. I have not, I will not have. That frightens all children and kills fear in the wise. Okay? That frightens all children and kills fear in the wise. So it's a different thing, isn't it? It frightens some parts of us, or say children, that are more kind of immature, but also kills fear in the parts of us that are much wiser. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So why is it this idea of killing fear? I find that very inspiring. I wish I was not fearful at all. But when you believe the ego is there and is fixed and is real, a lot of what we experience as fear is a sense of protection of that ego. Oh, when someone comes to me and says, oh, Lilaman, you did that wrong. Oh, it hurts. And I immediately feel again a sense of, no, she will see. I'll show her that actually this is right. And so you get this, a lot of what I experience as fear or any kind of mental state that is not very comfortable comes from this wish to protect, defend, be on the side of my ego. But if I convince myself that this extremely important sense of self is just an illusion, it's not that important after all, then what am I defending? So that fear has no reason to be there. Imagine it's like, for example, you're building a sandcastle and you really want to defend it from every wave. But you know that it's going to... And what happens to sandcastles? They just get dissolved. It's fine, isn't it? You're going to build another one. So if you have that kind of attitude, oh, it's all right. Oh, I did this wrong. Well, okay, shame. I can do it better. But if I don't take it personally, if I understand more about myself, I might not defend the sense of self with the same strength and the same kind of sense of entitlement. And my life would be much easier. So it's very simple, isn't it? Very simple. Ego is an illusion. You feel fear because you're defending it. If you understand it's an illusion, you just won't waste so much energy defending it. And life will be much richer and fun. Actually, the fun I'm adding. I don't think I read it anywhere. But Sangharakshita does talk a lot about joy, which in my books is similar. One thing Sangharakshita says as well is that how important it is that our practice is about finding an emotional equivalent to our intellectual understanding. So I'm here telling you all this. It's so easy. Ego is an illusion. Just stop protecting it, I'll be happier. I can say this, I can use words to say that, but emotionally, if you come and tell me something I don't like, I'm not going to find that easy. So how to develop this emotional equivalent? How to get the understanding actually getting in your gut so that you start responding differently and responding in a way of like someone who builds a sandcastle, and it's not that bothered if a wave kind of destroys it. I was thinking about other illusions. I feel like slightly challenged by this word illusion. Because deep inside I think, you know, there is still that voice saying, what do you mean? Of course your ego is there. Of course my sense of self is here. You know, I still have a lot of that. So I was thinking about other illusions. Okay, one illusion that we all know is an illusion, that we are used to it, is the fact that the earth is flat. So today I was walking from home to Bethnal Green Station. Of course it's flat. No, it's flat. If I look around, the earth is flat. Now I know the earth is not flat because I've seen pictures from outside, from astronauts and satellites and all that, showed me that this earth is not flat. But if I only rely on my senses, if I'm only looking really close to me, the earth is absolutely flat. So, but it's not, isn't it? What did people do to start noticing that actually the earth is not flat? What observation made people think, actually, this is not flat? Anyone else?
They looked out into the sea with telescopes.
And what did they see?
A horizon where ships disappear.
Exactly. It's interesting, isn't it? It's very interesting. You do actually. If you need to look far away. What you mentioned the horizon. So what is the horizon for you?
The curvature of the Earth is it stops at around 18 miles. Actually.
Mm-hmm.
So we see in a straight line because light is a straight line in a certain aspect. And so as we observe this, we can see the straight line. From where we're standing, we're stationary, only points out a certain distance.
Yeah, and it's far away. You keep those who are listening here on the web, they can't see. You're really showing it far away, something far away. You can barely see that. So, if we look at the horizons of our ego, or of our sense of self, we might see that ego is an illusion. Now, this is a metaphor, a kind of analogy, a metaphor, but still it's a poetic one. I would like you to just talk again, groups of whatever you like, two or three or four or five, and try to get a sense, a poetic sense of what is it that would be the horizon of your sense of ego? Where is it that your sense of ego starts getting to bits that they're a bit far away, but you know they exist, but they're just there far away, going into a place you don't really know.
Don't have a minute to think about it.
Yeah. Well, or where is it that you stop having a sense of your ego being so fixed? When are you surprised about yourself?
I suppose when you reach a situation where you are sympathetic, in a nice way, to someone else, so that something occurs, and instead of wanting to do something about it, you just feel that sympathy and that emotion and that love for that person.
What a beautiful, beautiful way of putting it. I find that very... It moves me, yeah. So you're kind of going beyond your ego. It's the horizon of your ego. Nice.
And there's often... Well, sometimes almost a sense of surprise, like you think, oh, did those words really come out of my mouth? Like, it actually doesn't feel like you did it. I seem to be saying the right thing in this situation. Mm. I kind of predicted it or planned it.
Mm.
Yeah. Which actually ties in with it being beyond the horizon, doesn't it?
Mm.
Yeah.
And also gives me the sense of both what you both said about you being bigger than what you thought you were.
Yep. This is not so poetic, but looking back in time, actually meeting a picture of, you know, myself, quote unquote, age 12 or 13, and just being like, who on earth is that? What? Yeah, we have some kind of, or I have some kind of narrative about the so-called story of my life, which, you know, is the somewhat linear, whatever, arc, some kind of arc of a trajectory, but actually when I try to contact the being that was, there's a strangeness and a cluelessness as to how this being, or a heap of aggregates, happens to be this right now, which then taps into, I have no clue as to, you know, the future. So what is becoming versus what I am becoming.
So you now have a sense of yourself, but when you think about yourself as 12, and that 12 years old had a sense of herself as well, was very strong, wasn't it? Especially being a teenager.
Depends on the teenager. And, mysteriousness of that. The complexity of processes involved.
In meditation.
Yes. What happens?
You realize your voice is a type of a quality, and then it stops. The realization is somewhat muddied by the fact that something carries on. There is an experiencing self, or at least there is in my case anyway. And that feels very real. But there's no way that I can talk about what it is that feels quite so real at that point. When the emotion becomes recognised, or the feeling, or the words, that something carries on. And actually, I do sense a clinging at that point.
It's that kind of thing where you sort of sense, you feel, I'm feeling good today, and you're building up a kind of whole narrative of how you're feeling and you're getting on with things, and then you sit down to meditate and you think, what's going on there?
There is more.
And you realise you're feeling a little bit more shaky or sensitive than you were telling yourself you were. So there's that kind of sort of building this ego, this picture of yourself, and then just something in meditation just kind of cuts right through all of that. And
you see that the story was not the whole story.
Yeah.
Is that the same thing you mentioned? Because you also had a sense of the story just dissolves and still there is experience.
It's not that dissimilar. Just that I get angry that there is something that still persists.
You get angry that there is something that persists.
Yeah, I mean, in a sense that if that's what I'm trying to realise, the heart of the matter or the essence of the matter, then how come I'm not enlightened yet?
Okay, well, in a way it's the right attitude, isn't it? How come I'm not? So if it makes you persist, great. If it makes you give up, no. But it's interesting, you're also aware of the anger, that existential anger. You want something more. And in your case, Heather, what I really get is the idea of integration. Actually, there is much more there that you're not aware of.
That sort of mindfulness, seeing what's really there and what you think is there. And that sort of ties in with how you, the picture you have of yourself.
I was thinking of other people. I mean, that's in a way, it's probably on more of a sort of psychological, for want of a better word, level. But just that very simple experience of often other people have thought I was, well, have seen my capability and potential more than myself. You know, other people have related to me as if I can do certain things. You know, here's me saying I could never, give a talk or write a book or something, and other people saying, yes, you can. And then you, almost like if you can put your faith in other people, then you can. And then you think, well, I could, but under my own steam, I didn't realize that. So other people, it's like other people believe in your potential more than you believe in it yourself.
And you know that through friendship?
Yeah.
Because it's in communication with others, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And almost like that becomes the definition of friendship then.
Yeah.
Of people who will do that, yeah.
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 I feel really reassured about our movement when I hear you guys talking, because we do put lots of emphasis in meditation. We also put lots of emphasis on friendship. And this seems to be things that help us with the horizons of our sense of self. Yes?
Can I just have a little... I had a really strong... loss of sense of self when I did a climb in Wales. It was my first outdoor climb, so this was a 90-metre vertical climb, and I had no idea that's what I was going to do either. So I would never in a million years have thought I could do that. but just that experience of being there, doing that, and not having expectations and limits put onto myself and being taken by surprise, I just... For 3 hours, I didn't think about anything, and it was really amazing because I hadn't put limits on myself. And I just wondered who was that. I didn't have a sense of self, and when we did get to the top, I just looked down into the River Wye, and just thought, how on earth did I just do that? I didn't even. I do that? Was I scrambling up this?
Yeah.
Rock face.
Yeah.
It was, really amazing.
That does remind me of what you said, Subhadramacharya. You can give a talk, you didn't know you would be able to do that. And you know, or you say something, you don't even know you're going to say that. So something you said about that you didn't have expectations. So there's an openness to that being possible. Because... you didn't have any expectations, but you went. You know, and also, it's a bit of a risk, isn't it? Especially if you're going up, climbing that high, isn't it? But what is it that we can climb with this idea of... You can climb higher than your ego.
Yeah, there's some similar stories that I did some rock climbing recently, and very little of it, and I was... with somebody on the end of a rope, and there was this real sense of mindfulness, a real concentration on what was happening absolutely in the moment, where I was going to put my next foot and my next hand.
Yeah.
But also the person on the top holding the rope, just having faith that just give me time, you'll get there. But there was a sense of that he was sort of willing me up there, you know, that kind of sense of friendship and support.
Yeah. Of trust.
Belief in me.
Someone is helping you. You need to do your work, but also someone is there to help. And in a way, if we use this as a metaphor for our practice, that's what we are doing here. We're helping each other with ropes. And I think Sangharakshita throws a huge rope with this book, because it really helps us kind of challenging a bit our idea of a sense of self. Very interesting. Do you want to talk yet?
Yeah, I was going to say that, everyone has said some things that can always be like a taste to me, which kind of makes me think that, you know, you're in a sense the master chef of your own, you know, taste. You know, so sometimes maybe you're a little bit bitter, thing like that. So then you kind of have something, you know, another ingredient experience, or maybe a bit sweeter. You know, so then I kind of understand how that tastes, what it tastes like, what maybe it needs to kind of move on. And taste or evolve or combination of some things.
So are you saying you need someone else to kind of push you a little bit?
I guess he's eating it, you know. What you make, because you're making, you're your master chef. You're putting ingredients into your... those ingredients are experiences. So I guess how you taste is, you know, also if someone experiences you, that's what you taste at them. Does that make sense?
What I was thinking on top of that is I also love following recipes, so not only inventing. So it was in my mind also that, using your metaphor, that I would like to just, you know, create my own taste, but I also like to see, oh, what else people do. The other day I tasted some ice cream with olive oil. I never thought I would taste that, you know, but it's good. You go somewhere else, you kind of try something else. So that's what would move, would make sense to me as well. Anyway, I'm aware we only have 10 minutes and I haven't done everything I should have done. So let's move on swiftly. The other thing I'm not going to explore here, but another horizon of our ego that Sangharakshita does explore in this book is dreams, your dream life. You spend a lot of your time in your life dreaming. While you're in the dream, you exist. Now, imagine going to that person in your dream saying, you don't exist. You think you're real? You are not real. Ooh, ouch. A shock, isn't it? Of course I am. In the dream, I exist. And then you wake up, you just threw away that dream ego without any problem. So just, you know, look a bit, have a look. What happens in your dreams? What do you experience? It's part of your life. So it's another kind of horizon, another other dimension. And who says only the waking ego is the master? You know, is the real one? It might not be. It's not. So this is all the part of I am not, I have not. Just one more thing is very important. I'm not going to explore here, but do keep this in the back of your mind for future classes. I'm saying our sense of self is much bigger than what we see as an ego, or, you know, ego that we know, or habits and all this. But please try not to just replace this with a bigger sense of ego, because it's just going to be a bigger illusion. So it's not what this teaching is saying. But we explore that some other time, okay? The other part of the teaching, do you remember? I'm not, I will not be, and?
What? I have not.
And I will not have. So one thing Sangharakshita says in this book I thought was so beautiful. He says that the I, the sense of self, sets an inner limit. You're actually much bigger than that, but that sets an inner limit. While the sense of mind sets an outer limit. So you've got your possessions. I've got my ring, my iPad. Look, I'm surrounded by things that belong to me. This book actually doesn't belong to me, but belongs to my friend, Damadina. So she's my friend. My stylus, my glasses. She's my friend too. So I've got my friend. My things. This is just making it, crystallizing even more my sense of me. We haven't got much time. What I was going to ask you to do, but you just do on your way back home, is think about something that is yours. Something that you can say full of confidence, this is my thing. This is my iPad and only mine. Okay? It's okay, that was her sneeze. Only yours, Fee. So, something that is completely yours. And ask yourself, how come that thing happened to be yours? What happened for that thing to be yours? In my case, I just went to the shop and bought it. Actually, my mom gave me the money, and then I went to the shop and bought it. If I had bought another one, it would be another one, isn't it? If the woman that had got another box, it would have been another iPad that would be my iPad. So you start thinking about what's yours and why that came to be yours. And you see how fragile that sense of yours is. So just reflect on that a bit. I find it interesting, challenging. So I will repeat what Sangharakshita said in this chapter, because I think it's a really important paragraph. So again, he says, if our gut feeling is that we have or are a self, it can feel as if the Dharma is going to take something away from us that is central to who we are, when in fact the Dharma is there to help us see ourselves, whatever we may be, more clearly. So just keep that in mind. Here we're talking about me, mine, not me, not mine, because we want to see ourselves more clearly. So think about the things you are, think about the things you have. Are they that fixed? Are they that, you know, how do they change? How they came about? What conditions are there? And that can help you loosen a bit that illusion that you are something completely fixed, completely real. You are real, it's just that you're not real the way you think you're real. And then I'll just stop here with the last sentence in the middle of this chapter, and Dayabhadra will continue from there on next week, which is, Sangharakshita says, overcoming ego, or this sense of self, is not just an idea. It's an experience, a way of life. Okay? I'll repeat. Overcoming ego is not just an idea. It's an experience, a way of life. So that brings us back to what I said at the beginning, that what we're experiencing here is a method. I'm not telling you, you're not real in the ultimate sense, you actually, your ego is an illusion, you're bigger than that, full stop. It's not just saying this and understanding that, it's actually practicing that. How can you practice overcoming your ego? So yeah, metta bhavana is one way. We talked about friendship, we talked about meditation, talked about helping others, talked about climbing, about cooking. I know it was not specific, it was an analogy, but something about being creative, being in relationship to others. What other ways do you think you could overcome your ego as a way of life? We've got 3 minutes. Any takers?
Generosity.
Sorry?
Generosity.
Generosity. That is especially with the mine, isn't it? It's my thing. Well, it was mine, I'll give it to someone else.
I struggle with this a lot because I'm a physiotherapist, so I'm constantly giving myself during the day. Yeah. So I always wonder where the boundary lies between what is actually true compassion and good feeling for my patients, and what is just my professional duty as a physiotherapist.
It's a fine line, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very difficult. I like to think that I am empathetic.
Yeah.
But it's my job to do that as well, so it's difficult to know.
Well, but it's a nice place to be, isn't it? If that is your kind of koan during the day. What a beautiful one to be. I mean, how much are you giving yourself and what's the boundary?
Because it doesn't have to be separate, does it? Mm-hmm. Aren't they you're sort of saying it's the same thing?
But I also hear it, I am, my first response was like yours, but I'm also hearing where is the professional responsibility as well. So it's ethics and generosity. I don't know, is that what you're saying?
Maybe I'm hard on myself because you sort of wonder whether it's truly me, well, that's me again, that's talking about self, but whether it's my ego or myself that's the compassionate element, or whether that's just because I have to do that.
That's
my job.
Mm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. The choice to do that must have come from somewhere in here that wants to do that for the right reasons. And your day to day, you know, you might need a coffee and feel tired and whatever, be grumpy with some people or whatever, but your choice to do that must have come from somewhere a bit deeper.
I really like this in this man told me once when I was in India, like he said, Stuart, first we must work on your body, and then after the body, then we'll work on the mind, and the spirit will follow. And I kind of took that as like kind of healthy in your work, so you go for a run or whatever, you exercise, you're getting out, and then like your mind just like falls, like good, nicer, cleaner falls. And that's the chance for you and kind of spirit to kind of grow in that sort of sense. So kind of help root me in a good way.
I think also for me it's about making the decision to come here. It's about making the decision to leave my where it is out there and to come here.
Well, you're coming to your centre.
With my thing.
Your class. Yeah. Anyway, my class has to finish. And then you can go to your home. But I hope I can see you all next week so we can have another of our classes. And keep thinking about, me, mine. You are not you, and you have not, and all that. But don't let that, don't let that give you a negative self-view. I think we explored it enough to see that means you being bigger than what you are. And the second half of the, this is only half of the chapter, and the other half will be discussed next week. So thank you very much.
Thank you.